Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, joined today by Mr. Michael Morris. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is another one of these sort of poster children for the collapse of local government across the country. And that is the municipality of Maribeng, which is in Northwest Province, around sort of heart of Beersport Dam, Brits, that kind of area. This is based mostly off of an opinion piece written by Shirley de Villiers in the Financial Mail, where the blatant corruption in the municipality is explored. Maribeng estimated quarter of its entire budget of 2.9 billion rand siphoned off on duplicated and inflated payments, fraud, theft, and corruption, which is according to forensic investigations that date back to at least 2018. So 6 years now. The municipal officials have been so blatant in their thieving that senior officials have had their gym memberships, DSTV, groceries, and personal clothing accounts paid for with tax money. And when hard cash is needed, and I'm quoting from the piece here, the numbers of bank accounts for bulk service providers have apparently been changed, redirecting funds to personal accounts before being switched back, a source told the publication. It is such a flagrant abuse of ratepayer funds, beggars belief. Also, at the same time, unsurprisingly, the municipality suffers from some of the lowest levels of service delivery in the country. Just over half the population has flush toilets, which is the national average is 70%, so that's massively down. Less than half have their refuse removed weekly, the national average is 67%, and only 3/4 live in formal dwellings, whereas the national average is 89%. Only 15% of people in the municipality have a constant supply of piped water. To make matters worse, it's not just that all the money has been stolen and not being spent. The municipality is in a huge amount of debt. Eskom, City of Tshwane, threatening to cut off various supplies of electricity and water. The sort of crowning jewel of this entire story is that the Lanesia Smart City, which was announced by President Ramaphosa, I think it was in his 2018 State of the Nation address, would have encompassed some of this municipality's territory in it, suggesting that, you know, kind of proving that the reality is so far divorced. And the cause of all this is, of course, the fact that despite there being an enormous amount spent on financial consultants, despite the fact that investigations by the Auditor General and other groups have found almost exactly who is responsible for this. No arrests, no moving forward on corruption charges. Things just continue as they are. There's so much, I think, that has caused this. Cater deployment, political protection, I think, being foremost amongst them. But, Michael, what do you make of this complete municipal disaster?
I mean, it's a wonderful snapshot, isn't it? And we occasionally come across these and talk about them on the show. I'm glad you specifically mentioned Shirley de Villiers by name. I always read her stuff, and I think it brings out, you know, the great virtue of good journalism, well written piece, excellently researched, masses of detail in there. It draws on you know, official figures, and she's gone off to look at things like you mentioned the financial consultants. Shirley de Villiers brings out this fact that consultants for financial reporting benefited to the tune of 34.6 million in 2018-2019. So this, you know, this is a municipality that's falling apart, but it also seems to have a sense that it is falling apart and it needs to do something about it. And towards that end, it has spent these 34.6 million rand. So, you know, kind of astonishing picture. The reason why I'm particularly mentioning Shirley de Villiers and the quality of the journalism is I think this is an essential element of our knowing the kind of society we're living in. We do, we do have this, to a very large extent, a kind of wonderful media that's kind of working hard to cover the country properly. And people like Shirley de Villiers really bringing out the kind of nitty-gritty of the problems. and in a way that is readable and authoritative. But you know, the point you make, it comes down to the fact that we know these kinds of problems. We've seen them before in other municipalities. I think it's also notable that, of course, a lot of this data comes from the Audit General. So we have a sense also here, and it's very encouraging, that there are elements of the state that are doing their job properly and working hard, clearly unbowed, say what they think needs to be said, reveal the data and so on. But so we know all these things. There is this very acute attention on what the problems really are. We know, you know, the names are named and so on. But in the absence of political will, it simply is allowed to continue. That's absolutely untenable. quite a grim story. It's you know, I suppose it's a measure of our being accustomed to the society we live in. We're confronted every second of the day that we sometimes find it funny. You know, it is almost comical that some of the stuff is so brazen. It's being done so brazenly. And that's a great shame. You know, three cheers to all the institutions, the media, the Auditor General, and I suppose ourselves for constantly, you know, bringing attention to bear on these deficits. Yeah.
So exactly you know, I think you're exactly right there. It is, you know, we do still have enough functioning sort of civil society here to point out some of these problems. We still have some elements of the state, particularly the Auditor General's office, at work. But a problem like CADA deployment creates this kind of thing, right? When you have a policy of putting your political, because these are not politicians, these are mostly senior officials, so they're employees of the municipality. When they are affiliated so closely with one political party, there's inevitably pressure to protect them, and the politics gets entangled with the functioning of government in a way that it really shouldn't be. And we can see this repeated in every single state institution where non-performing people, because they are important in the ruling party in their internal politics, simply are not removed. And it is yet another reason why CADA deployment urgently needs to be wound back and ended, and not replaced by a new kind of CADA deployment by an alternative party.
Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of alternative parties, News 24 has done a little bit of digging on the parliamentary list of the new MK party. The MK party's parliamentary list, of course, headed by President Jacob Zuma, even though there are very big legal question marks over whether he will actually be able to legally take up his seat in parliament, as he has a jail sentence given, as he was sentenced to jail for over a year, which disqualifies you normally from parliament. But the News 24 research found that something like 40% of the candidates who were on the MK party's list were too young to have been involved in the MK organization, which was disbanded in 1993, or indeed the sort of armed struggle at all, really. But this prompted the MK party spokesperson to give what is quite a shocking response when you consider the other things the MK party has been saying. He went on to say, when asked about, you know, why so few people had struggle credentials on their parliamentary list, he said, "Struggle credentials have nothing to do with the people nominated on the list. People cannot eat credentials. Your credentials mean nothing. What we need here is patriotic South Africans, because you are South African before you are a member of a political party. Being patriotic to your country means there is a certain ideology that you believe ought to be represented in your society that you should stand for, not credentials or stalwartism. We are saying we want South Africans regardless of color, creed, and gender." Now, that's something I can totally get behind. That's a sentiment I would not expect from the MK party. Although it's slightly in contrast to things that President Jacob Zuma has recently said on the campaign trail, where he mused while sort of having a discussion about how he didn't think democracy was working properly, that the secret vote should be abolished so that black people who wanted to vote against other black people, according to him, could be punished. People would need to come before him to show who they voted for, which is, of course, the exact opposite sentiment and worldview being expressed to what the spokesperson is expressing here. Michael, what do you make of this weirdness?
Yeah, it is. It's so many contradictions. I mean, it's very hard being a South African, actually, and having to negotiate our way through the smoke and mirrors of politics. As you say, these sentiments expressed by this organizer are the kinds of things that we would applaud. But we don't know if this is really genuinely, if this really genuinely reflects where the MK party is coming from and what it really believes has to be done. I think just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't Jacob Zuma sort of coaxing or persuading Afrikaner South Africans that they had nothing to be afraid of and that they could also get behind the MK party. We have this constant dabbling with the idea that we're a non-racial society, we're a constitutional state. We all believe in the same things. We are all South Africans. I mean, it's quite interesting that this guy was talking about, kept referring to South Africa, what South Africans need, how South Africans think. And yet, we can't quite bring ourselves to trust these sentiments when there are these quite fundamental contradictions. And so often, I mean, I think it's quite clever of the MK to have commandeered the kind of branding of the central part of the ANC's struggle history, and to wrest it away from the stalwarts, as they would see themselves, the people who were actually in MK, and to now present it as something that can be recycled and is kind of retread. It's quite clever, I think, of them to do that. But ultimately, what we really want are new ideas, or perhaps getting back to some quite basic ideas. And I think, unfortunately, with so many of these new versions of other parties and the kind of factional dispute that or disputing that, that's going on, is that all we're really doing is recycling the same old, quite tired and nostalgic and ultimately useless revolutionary rhetoric and revolutionary ideas, which is just
Exactly.
completely out of kilter with the kind of society we are today and where we're going and the things we need to have done.
And you can see in the ANC benches that they generally do actually tend to be the oldest party here. It seems like even MK, which is looking, I think, to represent a kind of more traditional leaders and older people in rural areas, is probably going to have a much younger bench of MPs than even the ANC. The EFF and DA already have younger benches of MPs than the ANC. But it does look in this case like MK is doing the time-honored tradition that many political parties across the ages and time have embarked on, which is telling every audience exactly what they want to hear. You tell traditional leaders that they should have all the power to decide legislation. You tell Afrikaans farmers that they have nothing to fear from you and that they're an integral part of South Africa. You tell the news media that you don't believe in racism and you've or credentials, and then you tell people in rural areas that they need to racially fall in line and vote for you, or else there'll be trouble. So it's very shameless, is what it is. All right, let us move on to our last story, and this is about South African Airways. And as we know, if you've been following the news or the show in particular, the deal for a private company to buy a 51% stake in SAA to essentially keep it alive, as it is bleeding money and is very short of cash, fell apart recently, with Minister Pravin Gordhan stepping away from the position after the election, possibly in connection with the collapse of that deal. It's difficult to say, but it seems as though the ANC has kind of gone backwards now in its thinking on SAA. The Deputy Public Enterprises Minister, Minister Bapela, has said that they're still open to a private equity partner, but as long as they don't control a majority share, and that government must remain in control of SAA. So we're right back to where we started, where SAA is going to continue forever, the zombie airline, to be tied around the necks of the South African taxpayer, even as it continues to lose money and not really do anything that useful for the country. Michael, what do you make of this?
I mean, the first thing that I think I should mention is in our discussion before the show, you made the telling point that privatization has become such a prominent part of the political debate, not because there's been this Damascene conversion within the ruling party, and people seeing the light about the virtues of exploiting private sector dynamism and innovation and so on, but simply because there's a gathering recognition that the government cannot do a lot of these things. They can't do them effectively. They can't run the what are effectively companies well and profitably, which is what needs to happen. And so it's become the situation which the state has been compelled actually to have to embrace ideas which is it has been long hostile to ideologically. And so I think we're in this awkward space at the moment where there's a promise that things are really going to change because they really are going to consult the private sector where there's a great deal of expertise. But then they decide they don't actually quite want to go that way because this would be a a retreat from their a fundamental ideological position. So yeah, it's a tricky one, and unfortunately, it's probably going to cost the taxpayer an awful lot of money until we eventually reach the point where a clear decision is made.
Indeed. Perhaps SAA will last as long as the ANC in power does, which could be a few more months, could be 5 more years. We'll have to see. But anyway, thank you very much for watching today. We hope you found the show interesting. And that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.